and they have to come with you to your application hearing. It's a sort of buddy system to help you integrate. Seems stupid for Corbin, Kizzy said. It's not like he has to learn Clip all over again. So, Ashby said, if Corbin has a legal guardian, the Quellen have to release him to that person? Yes. But we only have a narrow window to make it happen. We'd have to fill out the formwork, get the GC to approve it, and get it to the Quellen before they process Corbin's case. I have a friend I can contact. A minor GC official. I'm sure once they see it's an emergency, they'll sign off the formwork as fast as they can. The same friend that, Jenks said. He finished his question by pointing at Rosemary's wrist wrap. Rosemary's eyes swung down. Yes, she said. How long before the Quellen process, Corbin? Dr. Sheff asked. No one knows. Could be days or 10 days. They could be doing it now for all we know, but I doubt it. From what I understand of the Quellen legal system, they don't rush these things. All right, Ashby said. Just show me where you need my thumbprint. No, see, you can't be his guardian. Rosemary took a breath. She looked uncomfortable. There's a catch, and it's a stupid, bureaucratic catch, but it's one we can't get around. Let's have it. Quellen cloning laws aren't just strict. They're, I don't know what the word is, unyielding. My understanding on this is sketchy at best, but apparently the Quellen had a bloody interplanetary war a few centuries back, and it was mixed up with cloning and eugenics and all sorts of messy things. Nowadays, the Quellen don't just see cloning as an ethnically murky practice. They see it as evil. To them, Corbin's very existence is dangerous. As such, their laws on cloning are a lot more comprehensive than what other species have on the books. It's clear they thought about the possibility of cloning entering in from outside their space. Meaning? Meaning GC treaties or no, they won't release Corbin to anyone who comes from a species that bans cloning. In their eyes, they're doing those species a favor by keeping him away from the rest of the galaxy. She cleared her throat. So, the only way we can get Corbin back is if he has a guardian who comes from a species without cloning laws. Who doesn't have... Ashby paused when he saw the hesitant look on Rosemary's face. She wasn't looking at him. He followed her gaze across the table to Sissix. Sissix blinked twice, her face blank. She put her palm over her eyes, arched her head back, and let out a long, angry sigh. You are fucking kidding me. Wait, Kizzy said. Whoa! You? Andrisks don't have cloning laws? No, we don't have cloning laws. Why? Because we don't do it, she snapped. The idea never occurred to us. You know why? Because unlike you people, we think nature works fine on its own, without tweaking it and hacking it. And oh, this is ridiculous. Sissix, Ashby said, don't say anything. I'll do it. It's not even a question. I'm not going to leave him to rot in some terracite mine. She drummed her claws on the table. So, fine. What do I have to do? Sign some formwork? Go to a few hearings with him? Yes, Rosemary said. She licked her lips, speaking more quickly. And you have to be within the same system as him at all times for the duration of the application process. Sissix's feathers puffed. How long is that? Rosemary shrank into herself. Her whole body was one big apology. Up to a standard? Maybe more? Sissix swore in Reskitkish and walked away from the table. She turned back towards Rosemary. I'm not mad at you about this, she said. You know that, right? I know, Rosemary said, looking into Sissix's eyes. Ashby watched an unspoken conversation pass between them. He studied them with interest. He had a suspicion, but now wasn't the time to ponder it. There were more important things to think of. Sissix sighed again and tried to smooth her feathers down with her hand. "Well, come on," she said. "Let's go save the bastard." Sissix had only been aboard the enforcement orbiter for a few minutes, but already she loathed it. No windows, no colors, silent hallways, humorless, angular design. Everywhere she turned, a sense of disapproving sterility. She understood that prisons weren't meant to be cheerful, but this was worse than she'd imagined. It was the sort of place that inspired you to never do anything bad ever again. The only good thing was the warmth. But even then, the heat was thick, heavy. It felt like something you could chew on. They entered a holding room, which contained nothing but several wall-mounted scanners and an imposing set of doors. "Wait here," said her escort. The Quellen punched a code into a wall panel. The doors fell open, and Sissix nearly gagged on the air that drifted out. A miasma of unwashed skin and bodily waste. She pressed her palm against her nostrils and took a step back. How did the Quellen stand it? Did they even have a sense of smell? She fought down her growing sense of nausea and tried to see inside the detention area. The light was too dim to make much out of anything, but she could see body heat rising from pits in the floor. Pits. Did the rest of the GC know about this? Surely someone in Parliament did. Did they care? Did it make them lose sleep at night, knowing that they shared council sessions with sapients who treated other species this way? Or was easy access to Terracite enough to remove those qualms? The sick feeling within her grew, but now it had nothing to do with the smell. "And I'm here for Corbin," she thought, the notion refusing to sink in. She was in this hollow corpse of a place after filing some seriously binding form work that would leash her for a standard. A fucking standard. And all for Corbin. That biting, ugly waste. Why him? Why her? She could accept him being on the ship. She could deal with having to share the same food and air. But this was absurd. And unfair. And unearned. After a few moments, she could see the enforcer heading back to the doors, walking behind a human man. There was something wrong with him. Sissix could see it in the way he moved. What had they done to him? She sucked air between her teeth as he came closer. A dark spray of bruises covered his torso, purple ringed with yellow. His face was a mess, and his nose hung at the wrong angle. He moved stiffly, clutching his side with one arm. His other hand was busy trying to shield his genitals. Humans. Honestly, after being beaten and dumped in a pit, that's what he was worrying about. But then Sissix saw the look on Corbin's face. She thought it was anger at first, but no. It was shame. She would never fully understand human modesty, but she knew how deeply ingrained it was in them. She also knew that every hard feeling she had towards Corbin was returned in kind. For him to be pushed around without clothes on was probably humiliating enough, but to be seen that way by someone he despised was the ultimate insult. Sissix wished that someone else could have been sent for him. She looked away. "Are you sure you want him?" the enforcer asked. "He is an abomination." Sissix glared. "Go get the abomination's clothes. They were likely destroyed." She took a few steps forward to Corbin, who was having trouble standing. She took his arm and put it round her waist, helping him to stand. Had she ever touched him before? She didn't think so. There must have been a handshake, at least, when he'd been hired. She spoke again to the Quellen. Do you have anything? A blanket? A towel? Anything? The enforcer hesitated, then opened a wall panel full of medical supplies. Despite his unreadable face, Sissix got the impression that this Quellen was treading lightly around her. She was nobody, but her species was one of the big three in the GC Parliament, and they had far more pull than the Quellen did. Their species' diplomatic ties were tenuously civil at best, and an Andrisk treated poorly at the hands of Quellen enforcers was the sort of thing the news feeds would pounce on. The enforcer handed Sissix a small blanket, made of some foil-like synthetic fabric. She helped Corbin wrap it round his waist.
Thank you,
he said in a thin voice. It was obvious that he was having trouble drawing a full breath. His eyes were fixed on the floor, but Sissix could see him fighting back a small ribbon of tears. Just one more embarrassment he was trying to prevent. Sissix took her eyes off his face. She had no business seeing him like this.
Let's get you home, she said.
She led him out of the room, the enforcer following close behind. After a moment, Corbin spoke in a whisper.
I wasn't sure anyone would come for me.
Sissix said nothing. Nothing she could say would sound right or honest. They continued down the hallway. Corbin winced with every step. After a while, he said,
Why you?
She sighed.
It's complicated, and you're not going to like what's going on any more than I do. But it can wait until Dr. Chef patches you up.
For now, let's just say it was the right thing to do. An awkward silence fell between them.
Thank you, Corbin said.
Thank you.
Yeah, well,
Sissix said. She cleared her throat.
From now on, though, I get to crank up the temperature as high as I want.
4 days later, Corbin sat at his lab bench, spreading algae on a sample card. The last batch had come out slightly tacky, and he wasn't sure why. He spread the algae thin so that he would be able to see the cells clearly once he placed the card into the scanner. A normal task, but it didn't feel that way. Nothing did. Not his lab, not his bed, not his face. But that was exactly why normal tasks needed doing. He would put algae onto the card, and he'd put it into the scanner. He'd do it again and again until it felt the way it had before.
Excuse me, Corbin, Lovey said through the vox.
Yes?
The AI paused. There's a SIB call coming through for you. It's from Tartarus.
Corbin looked up from the algae and said nothing.
Tartarus? A prison asteroid out in the Kuiper Belt.
There was only one person who could be calling him from there. Lovey spoke again, her voice awkward.
I can dismiss the call, if you like.
No, Corbin said. He wiped the smell of green slime from the end of his sampling tool and set it aside. Put it through down here.
Okay, Corbin. I hope it goes well.
Corbin gave a curt nod. The vox clicked off. With a sigh, he turned to his desk and gestured at the pixel projector. The pixels scurried into action. A blinking red rectangle in the bottom of the projection indicated that he had a SIB call waiting. He watched it blink 5 times before gesturing to answer it. His father appeared. Corbin hadn't spoken to the man in 4 standards. He had grown old, a little heavy too, which was surprising. His father had always pushed Corbin to eat healthy. Corbin could see it now. The familiar curves and angles
and lines in his father's face. The features were more pronounced, worn deep with age, but they were the same as his own. It was more than just familial resemblance. Corbin would wear the same face one day. His father spoke. "They hurt you." Corbin leaned back in his chair, making sure that his father could get a good look at the fading bruises on his face. This was exactly why he hadn't let Dr. Scheff fix anything but the bones. He had been hoping for this moment, the moment in which his father would see what his hubris had done. "Hello, Marcus. And yes, I came back from prison with a broken nose and 3 cracked ribs. One came damn close to puncturing my lung. I'm sorry, Artis. I am so sorry." "Sorry," said Corbin. "I get ripped out of my home, beaten to a pulp, and thrown into some Quellan hellhole, only to be told that my entire life is a lie, and you're sorry? Well, thanks, but that doesn't quite cut it." Marcus sighed. "This is why I called, you know. I figured you had some questions. If you can stop hating me for a few minutes, I'd be happy to answer them. I can't make many calls from here. Ansible access is a rare thing." Corbin stared at the man in the pixels. He looked so defeated, so tired. Corbin found himself shaken by it, and it made him all the angrier. "All I want to know," Corbin said, "is where I really came from." Marcus nodded and looked down at his lap. "You know all those times you asked about your mother?" "Of course. All you ever said was that she died in a shuttle crash. You never wanted to talk about her, which makes sense, since she never existed." "Oh, no," Marcus said. "I did have a wife. She wasn't your mother, of course, but..." His eyes went somewhere far away. "Artis, I've never been good with people. I've always preferred my lab. I like data. Data is consistent. It's steady. It's easy to understand. With data, you always know what the answer is. If the data doesn't make sense, you can always puzzle it out. Unlike people." He shook his head. "I can never puzzle out people. I'm sure you understand." Corbin clenched his jaw. "Damn it," he thought. "How much of me is actually you?" Marcus continued. "When I was a young man, I took a posting down on Overlook." Corbin knew the place. It was one of the few labs down on the surface of Enceladus, strictly quarantined to prevent contamination of the microbial pools below the moon's icy surface. Only one person manned Overlook at a time, and those who were assigned there were on their own for at least a year. It was rare that people took an Overlook assignment more than once. "I thought it was the perfect place for me. I loved working down there. No people to disturb my work or get in my way, except for her." He paused. "Her name was Sita. She flew the supply shuttle that brought me food and lab supplies. She couldn't come in, of course, but I could watch her through the airlock cameras, and we spoke over the Vox." Marcus smiled, a warm, private smile. Corbin was startled. He'd never seen his father smile like that, not once. "And as you may suspect, she was beautiful. Not beautiful like they do in vids when they're trying to sell you something. Real beautiful. The kind of beautiful you could actually touch. And she wasn't from the orbiter. She was from Mars." He laughed under his breath. "I thought her accent was so damn cute." Marcus shook his head, as if clearing it. His voice became more grounded. "I was awful to her, of course. I'd snap at her if she showed up while I was in the middle of testing. And I've always hated small talk, so I barely gave her the time of day. I was like that to everyone, but she didn't care. She always put up with me, even when I was an ass to her. She always smiled. She made fun of me for my bad moods, for my uncombed hair. For whatever reason, it didn't make me mad. I liked the way she gave me a hard time. I started counting the days between supply drops. At first, I thought I was just lonely, that it was a symptom of living in isolation. It took me a while to realize just how in love with her I was. He ran his hand back through his thin hair. And then I got us both fired.
You what?
Marcus cleared his throat. One 10-day, I spent all of my free time cleaning up the station, made sure it looked presentable, set the table with nicer food that I'd been saving in the Stacy. Corbin gaped. You did not invite her in.
Oh, I did. And she accepted.
But, Corbin sputtered, does that station even have a decontamination flash suitable for humans?
Nope. I was sterilized before I went down to the station. The only flash installed there was meant for food and supplies. Having her walk through it wasn't even an option.
But your samples! His mind reeled. Throughout Corbin's entire childhood, Marcus had drilled him with the importance of preventing contamination. One time he'd revoked dessert privileges for a month after catching Corbin eating candy in the lab. Corbin didn't know the person that Marcus was describing. It certainly wasn't the father he knew.
All ruined, Marcus said. She had just enough benign bacteria on her to cause a few problems.
The project leader was furious when she found out. 6 months of work gone. Sita was fired, and I was given the option to either start the year over or leave the project entirely.
You stayed?
Oh, no. I left. I had just had one of the best days of my life, and it was all thanks to that beautiful woman. We hadn't even done anything that interesting. We just ate all my food and talked about everything. She made me laugh. And for reasons I still don't understand, I made her smile. There was no way I was going to be locked away from her down on Overlook. I spent the next 5 years trying to put my career back together, but it was worth it.
So, Corbin said, bewildered. His brain could not accept the image of his father as a lovesick young man willing to contaminate his lab.
You married her.
Marcus chuckled.
Not right away. I begged and scraped and pleaded until I found somebody willing to hire me at the Gene Library. Awful job, but I was lucky to get anything at that point. The head lab tech there had done a year down on Overlook, too. I think he sympathized.
Sita got a job with a cargo company based on Titan that didn't ask too many questions, either about who she was or what cargo they took on. Shady work, but, well, we thought it was a good thing at the time. Since I was back on the orbiter, we could see each other more often. And after a time, I married her. We had 5 wonderful years together.
Marcus's face grew tight, and for a moment, Corbin thought that he could see all the years of his father's life pressed down upon him.
One morning, she told me she'd have to leave her job in a few months. I asked why. She told me she was pregnant. I was ecstatic. By that time, I'd crawled my way up to a better position in the library, and we had enough credits saved up to start thinking about living elsewhere. It was the perfect time to begin a family. I'd never even thought that a family was something I'd be able to have. I mean, who'd love me?
His pixelated eyes found Corbin's. Corbin said nothing. Marcus continued.
2 10-days later, Sita was making a run from Titan to Earth. Ambi cells. She normally didn't make runs that long, but they were paying her double because of the valuable cargo. It wasn't the sort of job she could say no to. Thing was, the bastards at the shuttle yard didn't check to make sure that the containment seals were properly installed. This is before the GC really started cracking down on unsafe Ambi. Bureaucrats don't give a damn about anything unless it starts to affect a significant number of their constituents.
Marcus took a breath. I'm sure you can guess what happened next. The seals broke, Corbin said. Marcus nodded. I'm sorry. He meant it, for Sita's sake. At least an ambi accident was a quick way to go. The woman probably hadn't had time to realize that anything had gone wrong. Still, unfortunate as the story was, it didn't address the important question. This doesn't explain why you felt the need to clone yourself. Doesn't it? Marcus said. Sita was gone, and with her went the only chance at family I thought I'd ever get. I buried all thoughts of her, and focused instead on the child I could have had. You could have adopted. I wanted my own flesh and blood. Proof that someone had loved me enough to create a new life with me. Corbin scoffed. You could have found a surrogate. You could have met someone else. Yes, I'm sure you'd think that clearly if you were in the midst of grieving your dead wife. Marcus snapped. There. That was the father Corbin knew. At least he was on familiar ground now. So, where did you do it? Corbin asked. Where was the vat that you grew me in? Stitch. I took everything Sita and I had saved and went to Stitch. Stitch. Lovely. Stitch was a fringe colony that served as a haven for the darker side of the modding community. Even visiting Stitch was liable to get you interrogated and slapped with jail time if someone back in the GC found out about your little trip. There weren't many legal reasons for visiting such a place. After you were... well, after you came to be, I stayed a few more months, then brought you home. How did you explain the infant? I said that I'd met a woman on Port Coriel. We shared a night together, and next thing I knew, I had a son. I said that your mother couldn't take care of you, so I took you home instead. I chose a non-augmented gestation process, so it did actually take 9 months for you to fully form. And you aged at a normal rate. There was no reason for anyone to question it. My family chalked it up to me still grieving, but you know I didn't talk to them much anyway. As for Sita's family, they didn't want anything to do with me after that. They'd never liked me to start. And I suppose they didn't like the idea of me sharing someone else's bed so soon after their daughter's death. Corbin held up his hand. Old family drama was the least of his concerns. You said non-augmented gestation process. Is there anything about me that was augmented? Dr. Sheff had told him there was nothing out of the ordinary about his body, but he wanted to be damn sure. Marcus shook his head. No, the tech I hired kept trying to convince me to add a few tweaks, but I put my foot down. You're the same as me, flaws and all. Corbin leaned forward. That's why, isn't it? That's why what? Mistakes were never okay by you. A broken sample dish, a dirty sock on the floor, a spilled cup of juice. It didn't matter how well-behaved I was at school or how good my grades were. I'd come home with a scorecard full of excellence, but all you'd focus on was the one average mark. I just wanted you to be the best that you could be. What you wanted, Corbin said slowly, was for me to improve upon all the mistakes that you had made yourself. You didn't want me to be my own person. You wanted me to be a better version of you. I thought I was a kid. Kids make mistakes. And it didn't stop when I grew up, either. You never once stopped to tell me that you were proud of me or that I'd done all right. I was an experiment to you. You were never satisfied with positive results. You just kept looking for the flaw causing faulty data. Marcus was silent for a long time. I am proud of you, Artis, he said, though I'm sure that's too little, too late. There's no way for me to go back and be a better father. He looked back to Corbin. There's one thing, though, that I'm very glad of.
What's that?
His father gave a sad smile and looked around the sterile prison room. But it's me in here, and not you. He sighed. They told me that you have to reapply for citizenship.
Yes. I'm leashed to one of my crewmates for the next standard.
You're lucky, Marcus said. Aside from Sita, I never had any friends good enough to do that for me.
Corbin shifted in his chair.
She's not a friend, he said. She despises me, in fact. Just not enough to let me die in a Quellan prison. Don't sell yourself short, Artis. Even unpleasant bastards like us deserve company.
He smirked.
That's a quote from my wife, by the way.
Corbin exhaled something like a laugh.
I'd have liked to have met her, he said. Something occurred to him. Though if she had lived, I wouldn't exist.
No, said Marcus. But I'm glad that you do.
Really? Would you have traded her for me if you'd known?
How long's your sentence?
12 standards, Marcus said. I'll be an old man once I get out. But I'll be fine. I've been treated well here so far, and I've got a cell all to myself. I can finally catch up on my reading.
Corbin noticed a spot of dried algae gunk on his desk. It was a good thing to focus on.
One more thing, he said, scratching the gunk away.
Yes?
My birthday. Is my birthday my real birthday, or my pulled-from-vat day, I suppose?
Yes. Why?
I don't know. It's been bothering me.
He looked around his lab.
I have to get back to work now.
Yes, of course, Marcus said. The guards will be telling me to end the call soon anyway.
A pleading look filled his eyes. Maybe we could...
They stared at one another.
There was more distance between them than just pixels in space.
I don't know, Corbin said.
Maybe.
Marcus nodded.
Take care of yourself, son.
He waved his hand. The image faded. The pixels withdrew. Corbin sat listening to the humming pulse of the algae vats. After a while, he picked up his scrib from the desk. He opened his log program and made a quick entry. October 25th. Still my birthday.
You're pensive tonight, Lovey said.
Am I?
Jenks said.
Yes, Lovey said. You've got that little crease between your eyes that you get when something's on your mind.
Jenks rubbed the skin between his eyebrows. I didn't realize I was so easy to read.
Not to everyone.
Jenks leaned back against the wall with a sigh and pulled his red reed tin from his pocket.
It's this whole thing with Corbin.
Ah, said Lovey. I think everyone's still shaken up.
Corbin hasn't been sleeping well. He stays up late accessing his personal files, mostly pictures of himself as a child.
Please don't tell me that stuff, Jenks said, stuffing his pipe. You know I don't like snooping.
Lovey laughed.
You're not snooping. That's what I'm doing. You're just gossiping.
Oh, well, if that's all.
He lit the pipe, sucking air through the burning leaves. The smoke in his lungs made his shoulders go slack.
Poor Corbin. I can't imagine being thrown for a loop like that.
He turned his head, pressing his ear against the wall.
Is that your tertiary synapse router making that click?
Let me check. It's functioning normally.
I don't like that sound. He moved to face the wall and removed the access panel. His eyes darted over the lace of blinking circuits that lay within. Yeah, see, right here. The shunt's worn out.
Save it till morning, Jenks. That'll take hours, and you've been working all day.
Jenks frowned. Okay, but you wake me up if you experience any gaps in memory.
I'll be fine, Lovey said with fondness. I can't even tell that anything's wrong.
Jenks replaced the panel. Lovey spoke again.
I don't think Corbin is what's bothering you.
No?
No.
Then what is it?
I don't know, but I wish you'd say.
Jenks sighed, exhaling. The tiny work lamps overhead cast beams of light down through the smoky swirls. I've been thinking about your body kit.
Lovey paused. There's a catch, and you didn't tell me.
No, said Jenks, taking the pipe from his mouth. No catch. This whole deal is as respectable as you can be in black market business. Even the price was fair, all things considered.
Then what's troubling you?
Corbin's dad. That guy must have spent a fortune on getting himself cloned. Somehow, he was careful enough to not only make sure that Corbin never found out about it, but that the law never found out either. And he got away with it for decades. Corbin's more than passable. He's the real deal. No tweaks, no enhancements. Hell, even Dr. Sheff didn't notice until he made a point to go looking for it. And yet, he still got caught.
Yeah.
After all that money and all that planning, that poor bastard's locked up in prison, and Corbin's lost his citizenship. And that's after he got the shit kicked out of him by those fucking Quellen. He sat up. Look, we always knew getting a kit would be risky, but I'm not sure I've really thought about what that meant. I mean, okay, I knew prison would suck, but I'd always figured that if the law was on my ass, I could just take you and go to cricket. Or maybe a fringe planet somewhere. Wouldn't be perfect, but it'd be safe. But all this mess with Corbin got me thinking about what would actually happen if we got caught. Let's say I got caught with a kit before I uploaded you into it. Okay, I'd go to jail. Mr. Crisp would go to jail. But you'd be fine. You'd still be here, on the Wayfarer, with all our friends. Kizzy could look after you until Ashby got a new comp tech, and you'd still be here when I got out. But what if we didn't get caught until much later on? Not until after you were in the kit? What if it was like 10 years down the road and we'd stopped being careful? What if one of us said the wrong thing to the wrong person? Or what if bioscanners got good enough to see what you really were? What if we got stopped by the Quellen again, and they wanted to do a blood scan? I'd still go to jail, but they'd dismantle you, Lovey. When my sentence was up, you'd be gone. Not away. Not somewhere where I knew you were safe. Gone.
Lovey was quiet. The kit's on its way, Jenks.
I know.
And you can't get your money back.
He sighed.
I know, but it won't break me.
And besides, maybe we can still use it. Maybe the laws will change down the road. We could just wait until it's safer, or until I leave the ship or something.
This was my decision too, you know. You didn't push me into it.
I know, and I won't tell you no, not if it's what you want. But I'm scared. I'm starting to think maybe I wanted this so bad that I didn't let myself acknowledge just how fucking dangerous it is.
He looked down at his hands. As bad as I want to hold you, I don't know if it's worth the risk of losing you forever. Maybe it's better to just go on like this and know that there's no chance of somebody taking you away. The room was silent. Or as silent as it could be. The air filters hissed. The cooling system surrounding Lovey's core hummed. Jenks
Do you remember when we first talked about this? When I told you all the reasons why I wanted to have a body? Yeah? I lied when I said it wasn't for you. Of course it's for you. I do think it'd present some wonderful opportunities for me, and I imagine it to be a very good life. But it was always, always for you. I wouldn't have thought to do it otherwise, not in a serious way. But you said your pros and cons were things I came up with after I decided that this was something you deserved. I wouldn't have ever mentioned it if I thought it would make me unhappy. I do have some self-respect, after all. But yes, it was for you. And if it scares you more than it excites you, then there's no point to it. I'm happy here. I'm happy with you. Would I like a body? Yes. Am I willing to face the risks? Yes. But I'm content as it is. And if you are too, then maybe that's enough for now. Not forever, maybe. But we don't need to rush. I can wait for the galaxy outside to get a little kinder. He swallowed. Lovey, it's not that I mean, I want this so much. I just...
Shh. Come in further, she said.
Jenks snuffed out his pipe, put it back in the tin, and moved toward the pit. He reached for the sweater lying on the floor. Leave it, she said. He could hear her cooling system shut down. Not for too long, he said. Not for too long. He took off his clothes and climbed into the pit, as he had done many times. He sat down and leaned back against her core, his bare skin bathed in her glow. Without the chilled air, she felt like sunlight, only softer. I will always understand if you need to find someone who can give you more than this, Lovey said. I wouldn't hold that against you. I sometimes worry that I am holding you back from the kind of life an organic sapient should have. But if you choose this freely, then I don't need a body, Jenks. We've always been together without one. I don't know how to love you any other way. He pressed his back against her, pressed the soles of his feet, his shoulders, his palms, trying to soak in as much of her as he could. He twisted back and brought his lips to her. He kissed the smooth, warm metal and said, I don't see any reason to change the best thing I've ever had. Node identifier 9874457-28. Rosemary Harper. Feed source. Galactic Commons Reference Files, Public, Clip. Archival Search, Human, Quellen Relations. Display, Top. Top Results. List of Quellen Trade Agreements. List of Quellen Laws Regarding Non-Quellen Species. List of Quellen Immigration Laws. List of Quellen Deportation Laws. List of Quellen Laws Regarding Interspecies Coupling Families. Galactic Commons Membership Hearings. Human. GC Standard 261. Current GC Parliament Representatives. Quellen. Anatomical Comparison. Human. Quellen. Selected Result. Galactic Commons Membership Hearings. Public Record 3223-3433-3. Recorded 33261. Highlighted text, Quellen representative. Encryption, 0. Translation path, 0. Transcription, vid, text. Despite the differences between our species and cultures, there is an order that we all share. The development of a civilization is a scripted event. Minds join together to create new technologies, then better technologies, then better still. If a harmony cannot be found, that civilization crumbles. If ideas emerge that are incompatible with one another, that civilization crumbles. If a civilization cannot stand on its own against threats from the outside, that civilization crumbles. Scholars of sapient life note that all young civilizations go through similar stages of development before they are ready to leave their birth planets behind. Perhaps the most crucial stage is that of interspecies chaos. This is the proving ground, the awkward adolescence, when a species either learns to come together on a global scale or dissolves into squabbling factions doomed to extinction, whether through war or ecological disasters too great to tackle divided. We have seen this story play out countless times. Every one of us seated here in Parliament can speak of the planetary wars and political struggles of our ancestors, yet we overcame them to reach for the stars. We all know the stories of the Kohash, the Dantin Lu, and most recently, the Grum, ruined species who lacked the discipline to see beyond themselves to the next stage of evolution. Humans would have shared their fate. Humans left their planet not as one, but in fragments. When their planet began to die, the rich abandoned the impoverished for refuge on Mars. As the bodies piled up, those who remained on Earth formed the Exodus Fleet, headed not for their Martian brethren, but for open space. They had no destination, no strategy beyond escape. Were it not for one small Aeluan probe, the fleet would almost certainly have died out, and I find it unlikely that the Martians ever would have achieved the modest level of prosperity they now enjoy without borrowing from GC technology. And what of them now? What has this experience taught them? Nothing. They continue to spread themselves thin. Fleet members have left to form independent colonies, not because it brings wealth or resources to the fleet, but because they want to. The Martians and the Exodans may have bound their old wounds, but a division of spirit remains. And what of the fringe colonies, built by humans who want nothing to do with the diaspora or the GC? What of the hostile Gaian cultists back on Earth, hunting herd animals on fragile land? My point, fellow representatives, is that humans are a fractured, limping, adolescent species that has branched out into interstellar life not by merit, but by luck. They have not moved beyond intraspecies chaos. They have skipped the vital step the rest of us had to make on our own. By granting them membership into the Galactic Commons, we would be providing them not with a new life, but with a crutch. What meager resources they have to offer us are not worth the risk posed by allowing such an unstable element into our shared space. The GC has already spent too much on helping this minor species to escape the hardships they brought upon themselves. I ask you, what benefit is there in making humans one of us, if not resources or knowledge or military strength? Then what? Day 121, GC Standard 307. Heresy.
"Hello, boss,"
Kizzy said, walking into Ashby's office. Her grubby sleeves were rolled up, and her gloves were tucked into a front pocket. She held a dusty piece of tech in her hands.
"You only call me boss when you need a thing," Ashby said.
"I need a thing,"
Kizzy held out the part.
"This is a thermal regulator. It's what helps a Stacy maintain temperature. I assume that since it's not currently attached to the Stacy, it's broken."
Kizzy gave a sad nod.
"The bell tolled for this poor little guy."
"Do we have another on hand?" Kizzy shook her head apologetically.
"It's not the sort of thing I keep in stock. My brain's usually busy with making sure we've got spares for life support and the engine. Sorry, I didn't think of it. Ashby waved her comment aside. I'd be more worried if you prioritized the Stacy over the engine. I don't expect you to keep spares of every piece of tech we use. He rubbed his chin. His beard needed a trim. So what does this mean for the Stacy? The Stacy's field can hold without this. It's got a fail-safe system to make sure your food doesn't go bad while you're buying a replacement. But without the regulator, it's gonna go bleh after a while, no matter what. How long a while? 4 days, maybe five? We won't starve or anything if it goes, but I think we'd all do better with some fresh food between here and Hedraka. Ashby nodded. 3 10-days of bug flower patties and dry-packed rations did not sound appealing. And there was no guarantee that there'd be somewhere for them to resupply at Hedraka. What did the Teremi even eat? 4 days isn't enough time to get a delivery drone out here. I know, we may be kind of screwed on this one. However, she brushed her hand over the backs of her thighs, checking for machine gunk. When her hand came back clean, she sat down in the chair opposite Ashby. Sissek says there's a colony rock, not far from here. Popped up on the scanner yesterday. Dunno what it is, it's not on any of her maps, but it's only half a day out. We could park the ship there, hop in the shuttle, and give him a visit, lickety-split. We're on the bleeding edge of the GC. That's a fringe colony for sure. Knocking on the doors of unidentified fringe colonies was not something Ashby was eager to do. But they might have tech I can use. That's an awfully big might. They might not have anything. Yeah, except that this planet is also a rogue planet. It's got no star to keep it warm. That's how Sissek noticed it in the first place. It's got these satellites providing artificial sunlight. They're powering it by sucking ambi right out of a nearby nebula. Ashby raised his eyebrows. That's pretty serious tech. The tech itself isn't that fancy, but what I want to know is how they calibrated their harvesters to work within a nebula. There's a reason that ambi's harvested around black holes. It's concentrated there. GC techs haven't found a way to harvest smaller pockets without going broke. She scrunched her lips and thought. In any case, if they can harvest ambi in a nebula, I'll bet my boots they've got simpler tech on hand, too. She gestured with the regulator. Ashby gave a quiet nod. Any indication of who this colony belongs to? No, but not human. Why not? Kizzy gave him a wry look. Fringe colony or not, if humans had their hands on that kind of tech, there's no way we wouldn't have heard about it by now. They'd be so rich, it'd be gross. Ashby drummed his fingers on the table. Any ships around? Any weapon arrays? No. No weapons. We checked. No ships, no orbiters, no docking ports. Other than the satellites, it's a dead sky out there. Ashby thought for a moment. Okay, let's be smart about it, though. I don't want to head that way until I know who's there. He gestured at the pixel screen to wake it up. Hey, Lovey, he said. I need an open SIB signal to go out to that rogue planet. Just let me know if somebody picks up. Will do, Lovey said. Kizzy dragged her chair over next to Ashby's and watched the screen intently. Kizzy, nothing's happening, Ashby said. They might not pick up for a while. They might not pick up at all. It's exciting. It's like going fishing or something, waiting for someone to bite. Ashby looked askance at Kizzy. When have you ever gone fishing? I do it in Battle Wizards all the time. The SIB indicator on the screen lit up. Kizzy leaned across the desk, pointing. Look, see? A bite. They bit. Ashby put his hand over Kizzy's shoulder and pulled her back into her chair. Let me do the talking, okay?
The last thing he needed was for Kizzy to rub some twitchy fringe colonist the wrong way. He gestured to pick up the call. An alien appeared on screen. Ashby's jaw dropped. It was a cyanid. But not a cyanid like Ohan. This cyanid had let their fur grow out. No fractals or holy patterns had been shaved in. There was something more alert about the way they held theirself. Not at all like Ohan's perpetually relaxed slump. There was a slackness in the face, a thinness to the fur, and though Ashby knew he couldn't make any presumptions about a species he knew little about, he couldn't shake the obvious conclusion. This cyanid was old. "Hello," Ashby said, shaking himself out of his surprise. "Do you speak Klip?" The cyanid spoke, the same bird-like coo that Ashby had heard Ohan make at times. As the cyanid opened their mouth, Ashby could see that their teeth were unfiled. It was like looking into a cave full of sharp stalagmites. The cyanid gestured something towards Ashby, still cooing as they looked around the room behind them. Unfamiliar with other cyanids as Ashby was, he could read this behavior well enough. "Hang on, let me find someone who can talk to you."
"Ashby,"
Kizzy whispered.
"I know,"
he whispered back. "I'm so glad I'm here for this," she said, resting her chin against her fists. There was movement on screen. The first cyanid made room for another. This one's body was about the same size, but differently shaped. There was a stockiness around the hips and shoulders, a sharp definition to the eyes and jaw. Their build varied enough from the first cyanid, and from Ohan as well, that Ashby concluded this pair was of a different sex. As the two cyanids switched places, the first touched the second on the shoulder. They touched. Ashby thought of how Ohan slunk away from the crew when they passed in the hallway, how they barely tolerated Dr. Sheff laying his hand feet on them during medical exams. Who were these people?
"Good day,"
the new cyanid said. Their accent was thick as fuel. Ashby noticed that this one did have filed teeth.
"My name is Mass. Forgive my words, my Klip is old."
Ashby smiled, taking care to speak slowly. "My name is Ashby. I captain a tunneling ship. This is Kizzy, our mech tech." Mass cocked their head.
"Tunneling?"
"Yes. Yes, I know about tunneling." They gave a yawping laugh.
"I know much about tunneling."
"I, not us." Ashby stared. "Excuse me, Mass, I don't mean to be rude, but are you not a pair?"
"No,"
said Mass. There was pride in her voice. Unmistakable, even through the accent.
"No one is here. We are a colony of solitary
heretics,"
Kizzy gasped. Ashby glared at her, but Mass did not seem to take offense.
"Heretics? Yes,"
Mass said.
"Do you have a pair on your ship?"
"Yes," Ashby said. "Our navigator."
"I was a navigator once, for Harbatians," said Mass. "Before here, before I was here. Old words, sorry."
"No need to apologize. I can understand you." Ashby considered what Mass had said. He hoped he wasn't offending Ohan just by talking to this person. "Our navigator doesn't know we're talking to you. We didn't even know who was down there when we sent out the SIB."
"Oh, I thought..." "No, nothing."
Mass made a trilling sound.
"What is your need?"
Ashby nudged Kizzy. "I'm looking for some tech," she said, holding up the broken regulator. "Nothing fancy, just something to fix our Stacy."
"Ah, Your food. You need to fix your food.
The Cyanet seemed to find this funny. At the mention of food, Ashby thought of Ohan's tubes of nutrient paste. You probably don't have Stacy Tech, do you?
We eat, Mass said. We do not suck down paste like pears. Come to us. We'll find tech. Might have to bang it around to make it work, but techs like to bang things, yes?
Kizzy laughed.
Yes, we do.
Do you have a shuttle?
Yes.
Good. Our ships are old as words.
She gestured at the screen. A set of landing coordinates popped up.
And we must talk on your pair. Are they waning?
They are, Ashby said.
Not for long, Mass said. Come down. Come down. We will talk. But do not tell your pair you come. They will not like it.
The screen went dark. Rosemary had seen such little variation in Ohan's moods, much less seen them burst into her office, that it took her a second to realize the pair was furious. Their eyes were wide, their breath shallow.
Where did they go?
Ohan said, their voice shrill. Rosemary, who'd been in the middle of clearing invoices, found herself tongue-tied. Who? She said stupidly, even though she knew who Ohan meant. Ashby had come to her 2 hours before, told her that he and Kizzy were flying out somewhere Ohan could not know about. Rosemary had found it odd that he'd asked her for discretion. When did Ohan ever talk to anyone? Yet here they were, standing at her desk, looking uncomfortably carnivorous. Rosemary had always thought Ohan looked cuddly, like a stuffed toy. Not now. Ohan's shoulders were back, their neck curled, their eyes wild. Rosemary didn't like Ohan like this. Ohan made an irritated sound.
We awoke to find the engine stopped. Then we found the shuttle gone. We know what region of space this is. And you will tell us now if Ashby has gone to see the heretics.
Rosemary swallowed hard. Following Ashby's instructions was one thing, but there was no use in lying now. Yes, she said. A growl rose from Ohan's throat.
Why?
They cried. Kizzy needed some tech, Rosemary said, keeping her voice steady. She thought that maybe, if she could stay calm enough, she could bring Ohan back down. Something for the Stacy broke. They went to get a replacement part. Puzzlement drove some of the fire out of Ohan's eyes.
Tech, they said. They went to get tech.
Yes. Ohan threw their head back.
It doesn't matter. They will fill their heads full of lies.
Who will?
The heretics!
A look of horror crossed their face.
Our crewmates! They will be contaminated when they return!
They'll get flashed on their way back in, just like always.
Yes, but...
Ohan shook their head in haste.
I must speak to Lovelace. She will need to update her contaminant database.
Without warning, Ohan's legs went limp. They crumpled down, grabbing the edge of Rosemary's desk as they went, gasping for breath.
Ohan!
Rosemary dashed to their side. She instinctively reached out, but stopped as she remembered who she was dealing with. No physical contact without permission. Can I help you up?
No!
Ohan wheezed.
We're fine.
The vox switched on. I'll get Dr. Chef, Lovey said.
Please don't,
Ohan said. They pulled theirself to their feet with shaking hands.
It is just the wane. This is how it must be.
They drew in a shuddering gulp of air.
Call Ashby. Tell him to get his tech and leave.
Tell him to not listen to the heretics' lies. They are poison. The heretics will wish to end me.
Rosemary could hear Dr. Sheff's heavy footsteps hurrying down the hall. From the noise, it sounded as if he were running on six. Ohan, no matter what those people say, no one on this ship is going to hurt you. Ohan swung their big, dark eyes to Rosemary.
You might not mean to, but you could.
I don't like this place, Kizzy said, her mouth full of fire shrimp. It feels sad.
Ashby worked the navigation controls, adjusting their approach toward the rogue planet. It was frozen over, cased in a cracking lattice of ice. The warming light of the satellites was concentrated on one large, circular patch of bare rock, too perfectly shaped to be natural. From their vantage point up above, Ashby could see one cluster of opaque, bubble-like buildings, built where the light was strongest. There were no other settlements, not that he could see. I don't know, he said. They've got those sun satellites, and they're clearly doing well enough to have a space elevator. Space elevators aren't a high priority if you're hungry or without shelter. Sure, Kizzy said, but they're still all alone out here. No star or moon to keep them company. They've got an empty sky. She shaped the edges of the fire shrimp bag into a spout, tipped her head back, and poured the bag's contents into her mouth. You're getting crumbs all over the place. Who's responsible for cleaning out the shuttle? She jabbed a thumb in her chest. This girl! That's not the point. Ashby looked back at her. Remember that time you had to clean fire shrimp out of an air filter? Kizzy's face fell in grave remembrance. She solemnly rolled the bag shut. Until later, my delicious friends. The vox crackled on. An AI began speaking in Siritu, the soft, haunting language of the Cyanids. Sorry, Ashby said. We don't understand. The AI paused and switched to clip.